It's the Criterion. It's the Criterion. 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 N.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Criterion Project, and this is the show where we like to talk about what is playing on the Criterion channel and also what else we've been watching, and it's so much fun. And I'm film critic Rachel Wagner, and Conrado's here.
Yes, he is, as always. How you doing, Rachel?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I'm always excited to talk about musicals, so this is going to be super fun.
Yeah, I agree. A very fun movie that we're going to be talking about. But... as always, we don't really start by just going and talking about the movie at hand. We have another segment, right, called What Have We Been Watching?
Yes. So what, Conrado, have you been watching lately?
So I just watched on the Criterion channel a movie called Picnic at Hanging Rock. Have you seen this?
Mm-mm.
So it's a movie, an Australian movie, from 1975, directed by Peter Weir, who people might know as the director of movies like The Truman Show and Master and Commander and things like that. But this is one of his earlier movies back in Australia. And it kind of became a big, important Australian movie, influential in kind of like ushering kind of this new era of Australian filmmaking in the 70s. And it's kind of a literary adaptation, actually. It's set in 1900, and it's about a school, like a girls' boarding school, that they take a picnic for St. Valentine's Day, and some of the girls who go on the picnic just disappear, and nobody really knows what happened. The movie presents this like it's based on real events, and I think the book in which it's based on also presents as real events, but it seems like it's just invented for, it's just a fictional story. But I think part of the idea is to be presented this way, kind of like to be, ambiguous on purpose, because the whole movie is very much about not knowing why these girls disappeared and what called them to separate from the group in a very kind of like, almost like a mysticism kind of way, in a kind of like, talking about, womanhood and girlhood and repression and, repressed sexuality, but also like the desires of the people around and how society views young girls and young women, which I thought was very interesting. The first half hour or so, it's the lead up to the disappearance, and then there is like the aftermath. And I thought it was very interesting. It reminded me a lot of, and I wonder if she was influenced by this movie, of a lot of Sofia Coppola movies. I could see kind of the influence of this movie on stuff like Virgin Suicides and The Beguiled, and even Marie Antoinette and some of that stuff, that kind of like loneliness and confusion of being a teenage girl. Which I think was very interesting. The movie is beautifully shot. The cinematography, the costumes, the art direction is all, kind of like that period piece, beautiful elegance, and the Australian kind of countryside. It looks also beautiful. So I think it's a very interesting movie. I liked it a lot. And I wonder what you would make of it, Rachel, because it's a, you do like your period pieces and your literary adaptations, but this one's like a little more maybe ethereal. So I wonder what you'll think of it, this one.
What's it called again?
Picnic at Hanging Rock.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I never heard of that one. So yeah, that's interesting. Well, my recent watch has, I've been on a bit of a Jane Eyre kick.
I
started watching Jane Eyre. I just finished up doing a Jane Austen month on my channel. And so that was fun. And I watched a whole bunch of Jane Austen, and then now I'm watching a whole bunch of Jane Eyre. I love the 2011 Jane Eyre. I think it is just about a perfect movie. They took some risks with changing up they made it a non-linear kind of storytelling, but that works for me. I liked it. And they kind of get to the relationship a lot quicker, partly because of that, but they skim over a lot of the early stuff in the book with, you know, her childhood and things like that. And that's fine with me. I want to get right to the, to the relationship, because I love Rochester and Jane and Michael Fassbender. Oh, he's so great. And I just think it's such a beautifully made movie. It's so well done. And so that was really great to watch. I think that Jane Eyre, for me at least, is one of those stories that's hard to do wrong. I can't think of any version that I haven't enjoyed on some level.
So yeah, I remember liking that 2011 version that you're talking about a lot as well. But it's the only one that I've seen, and I haven't read Jane Eyre or anything, and I didn't know anything about the story until I saw that back when it came out. So probably a different experience from yours, even though I did enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, there's ones that are closer to the book. There's a famous one from the 80s with Timothy Dalton that's really good, but it's 11 episodes. It's really
Okay, so it's like one of those BBC miniseries.
Yeah. Then there's a great BBC one from, I think, 2006 that with Ruth Wilson and Toby Stevens, that's really good. That's a more accurate to the book, but I really like, there's a version with Charlotte Gainsbourg and William Hurt. And William Hurt is a very American Rochester, but I don't really care. But I think Charlotte Gainsbourg is probably my favorite Jane. She's like perfect. Yeah, she's like the perfect mixture of plainness and, but also beauty. I don't know. I think they get it. They nail it. But but I just love the story. I think it is so passionate, and so their love is so strong. And I don't know. It's just one of those things, like I said, that's hard to do wrong for me.
So are you doing one of those compare all the adaptations kind of thing for your channel?
Yeah. Well, so I went on this kind of binge. And so I put out online, I said, does anybody want to do a ranking episode of Jane Eyre? And you couldn't do all of them. There's, I think, 16 filmed versions of Jane Eyre.
Right.
But some of the big ones. And our friend Jen Johans is going to join me on.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. And so I'm really excited. Looking forward to that. We're going to record it for Homeworkies Podcast in May.
Sounds good. All right. So we'll be looking forward to that.
So, yeah, but let's talk about this little movie called Colma the Musical. Had you ever heard of this before?
No.
Criterion?
No, so it was added to the Criterion channel in April. And the first time that I heard about it was on Twitter. Some people, in particular, Peter Kaplowski, who is a programmer at the Toronto International Film Festival, and I think he was tweeting about it and talking about how it was like this, you know, very independent movie that he liked a lot and he thought was really cool that it was on Criterion, and it really got me intrigued. So then you suggested it for an episode, and I was like, oh, this is perfect, because I've been meaning to watch this movie. So what called to you about the movie? Is it that it was a musical?
Yeah, I mean, that was the biggest thing that intrigued me, because, you know, I love musicals so much. Mm-hmm. And I'd just taken my Broadway trip in March, and I did in April on my channel, I did a classic musical month, which was really fun. And I had particularly reviewed Flower Drum Song, which is, an underrated musical. Classic musical, and it was one of the few movies that had an all Asian cast, especially back in 1961. And it has its flaws, but overall, I think it's an interesting movie. And so I don't know. I was just thinking about musicals, and what I could pick. And I decided to, it's always a little bit risky picking something that you've never seen for this kind of thing, because it could be terrible and then, you know, it's not as fun. Mm-hmm. But I just decided to, you seemed interested, so I decided to go for it. And I really enjoyed this movie. I thought mm-hmm. it was really fun. And I think I like the soundtrack even more than the movie. I've been listening to it.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it on Spotify? How have you
listened? It's on Amazon. I don't know if it's on Spotify.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I just think it has such good bops. Like, I've been enjoying these songs.
There are some good songs in here, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I totally can see why this is kind of considered to be a cult classic.
Mm-hmm. And I think going off of that, a real cult classic, right? Because it's something, you know, a lot of the time people talk about, oh, it's a cult classic and it's like Star Trek or something. And everybody knows Star Trek now, you know, maybe it was a cult classic back in the day.
Right,
when but when you hear about something that you truly have never heard of, like this movie, and that it has a following and an interest, that's, I think, really special. And it piques my interest. And I think, and I was also very satisfied with it. I thought it was very, very fun and very charming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I went to school for theater. And then, you know, I've done, like, you know, no budget theater and obviously web series and TV shows now. Mm-hmm. With no money. We even did a musical episode of Wormholes in the first season. And this reminded me a lot of the process of doing that. And it reminded me of kind of like what you can do, if you have, you know, the creativity and the people who will do it, and how you can be very creative and fun without a huge budget. You know, this movie was made for, I think you told me, $15,000 or something like that.
$15,000. Yeah.
Which is insane for a movie, you know, like it's so, so little money when you're making a feature length movie. And we should say this was made in 2006 by director Richard Wong, and the writer and composer was H.P. Mendoza. So you would have him to thank for all these bops. And from what I did, a little bit of research that we did, Mendoza, they are from Colma, I guess, which is a city in California close to San Francisco. And Mendoza had written this kind of like concept album with these songs, and then Richard Wong heard it and he was like, oh, do you think we could make like a movie musical out of this? And then they just did it, and the movie played a bunch mm-hmm. of festivals, and slowly you know, it became kind of like a hit with the people who were seeing it, and a lot of people connected with it, and I think that's really cool and that's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was gonna ask you, how do you approach these micro budget kind of indie films? Because obviously you have to be willing to kind of ignore, like, maybe not the best acting, you know, these kinds mm-hmm. of things. Like, how do you go into it?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's one of those things, like, I feel like I am a little very connected to it, because obviously our web series Wormholes is a show that I am very proud of, but also a show that was done with even less than $15,000, you know? So it's like, we have to do a lot of like very practical, cheeky effects, and we try to make it part of the fun that it's low budget, right? Mm-hmm. So, but after having that experience and really wanting to get people to see it and connect with it, and having the feeling sometimes that some people might not give it a chance because it doesn't look like a, you know, professional Hollywood movie that cost millions of dollars, I have a soft spot for movies like this. But at the same time, I think, you know, not always having a soft spot and wanting them to succeed is not the same as like being like, I love all of them, right? I think you see a lot of them and you are like, oh, you know, I saw what these people were trying to go for. Good for them. I support them, but I don't think the movie is very that good. But this movie, I think, is a case when the movie is a lot of fun and it is good and it is really, and it's very, very creative. I was really impressed by some of the musical sequences and the things that they do with the direction, and just that kind of like that sense of humor that the movie has about its musical self. There's that small musical sequence when there's a bunch of people in the background. I think it's just two guys who are just doing kind of like parkour in the background. They're just doing flips and stuff while one person is singing, which I thought was very funny. And the scene at the party is very impressive with these long takes that go around the whole party and people are coming in and out and everything's choreographed very impressively for some, you know, for a movie with such a small budget. So I had a great time watching it. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was charming, as you say. And I really liked the music. And it seemed like these, you know, three people were actually friends. And you mm-hmm. felt that kind of chemistry between them. And I agree with you that these indie movies, I've been to Sundance enough times that sort of the veneer of it all has kind of been chipped away a little bit, that an indie film can be just as terrible as anything else.
Right. Yeah.
But in this case, it had the real, it wasn't only that it was a charming film, but also the fact that you could feel the fact that they were all making it together. And there was this mm-hmm. love behind it that added to the sense of chemistry and the sense of fun.
Yeah, that makes it feel really special, but you can sense that excitement of the people making the movie, that, you know, mm-hmm. this is their first movie. They really want to do something here. They might not have all the resources, but they're going to do the best that they can with what they have. And they're going to squeeze every single dollar of those 15,000, you know, for mm-hmm. what they can do.
Yeah. So there's Billy, Rodell, and Maribel. Mm-hmm. Did you have one of those, their story that you liked more than the other?
Yeah, I think I did. Actually, maybe let's give a little bit of background since it's a movie that's not that well known for the people listening. Billy, like Rachel was saying, Rodell and Maribel, basically they're friends from high school who have just graduated. I think they graduated like a year ago, or they just graduated, something like that, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's been some time because when the movie starts, they're talking about the city of Colma and how nothing changes there and everything stays the same and it's very boring and it's very nothing and they can't really do something with their lives in Colma is the feeling that they get. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there must have passed some time since they graduated and they still feel kind of stuck there. And they don't know what to do. So it's basically one of those coming of age stories about moving on to the next phase of your life. And each of them, like Rachel was hinting at, is dealing with a different thing. I have to say that I liked Mirabel and Rodell's stories a lot. I think Billy is the one that I struggled with the most. His story was okay, and it was kind of fun, but I don't know, there was something about it that I was, I guess I found him frustrating with this whole thing about like being hung up on his ex-girlfriend and, you know, that kind of thing. And then he ends up being like a little myopic towards his friends because he gets obsessed with this show that he's in, this kind of musical. Although I have to say that the scene at the show when they're doing the music, the fake musical within mm-hmm. the movie is really funny. I thought that was really fun.
Yeah, that was good. And I mean, we have the relationship between Tara and Billy.
Mm-hmm, right.
And they're doing the show together. And he's the one that's kind of trying to figure out what he wants. But then he also maybe is a little bit interested in Maribel. Mm-hmm. So he's I can see why he would be your least favorite. He's probably my least favorite of the three.
As well,
but
yeah.
I still enjoyed it, but mm-hmm. it was hard. We have Rodell, who is struggling to come out to his single father. Mm. And that scene where he beats up his dad, that's pretty brutal.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, yeah. And it's really struggling because his dad clearly does not accept this. And Rodell, we should say, it's played by H.P. Mendoza, the writer and a composer of the movie. Mm-hmm. And he does a really good job, I think. In that role. And Rodell is an interesting character because obviously he's struggling with all of this stuff, but he's also very sarcastic and almost mean in his sense of humor about people. Mm-hmm. And he has like this kind of like, you know, armor of disregard towards the others that I think felt very honest to me. You know, I think I feel like I've met some people like that throughout my life who use that as a mechanism for defense and for going out in social situations when they feel like they're not entirely safe. And it also seemed to me like something also of its time, of that 2000s era. You know, 2006 is a little before, it's right before I went to high school, but it did remind me a lot of like some people that I knew in high school. Remind me even of my friends, shout out to my friends Willie and Vivi, but they were like, we were kind of like three people hanging out, not unlike Billy and Rodell and Mirabelle back in the day. So that was kind of like also touching to me, and I definitely connected with that.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the whole theme of Colma being a cemetery town?
I think that's fun. I mean, I wonder, I suppose that's also based in real life, but also it's appropriate. You know, I think it's one of those things that really colors the whole, the themes of the movie, and that gives it like an extra, layer of like, it's such a good metaphor, right? They feel like they have to stay there. They're going to die. They're going to be in a cemetery.
Yeah. I really liked the whole number of dead walking. There's all the couples dancing at the
cemetery.
Graveyard.
Yeah, that's very good.
That was a really good sequence, I thought. And the name of the musical is called Friend Joseph, and that's the song that you were referring to. That one is
the musical
fun.
That Bill is in. Yeah,
yeah,
which is really silly. You know, it's a very meta number about like musicals and silliness. I do have to say that I really loved Maribel as a character and the actor who plays her. Her name is L.A. Rennigan, I want to say. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And I thought she was so good. She like brought this element of life, of excitement that I think is necessary in this movie, because both Billy and Rodell are so, they're so kind of like toughened by life, and they're so kind of like that teenage kind of like, I'm over it, I'm sad, I'm kind of like, you know. So it was good to have a third character who brought a little bit of energy to it. And I do think that I find everything that happens with her very interesting. The relationship between Billy and Maribel I thought was interesting, because it feels a little romantic at times and then it isn't, and then it's kind of like she has her own things going on, and then at the end it's kind of like more of a friendship thing. But I think it was done in a very kind of like realistic and somewhat mature way to how those things go a lot of the time. You know, it wasn't the classic like, oh, the girl who was my friend all the time, she's the one I should be with. It was a little more complicated, more honest than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really liked the whole scene where she tells Rodell that he hurt her feelings by basically shutting her out of what's going on. That was really good. And I love the whole one day. I think that particularly part two, but I really like that song.
Which one is that? Sorry, I can't remember by the name.
It's the one of the last songs that they sing.
Is it right after that scene when she talks to Rodell?
Yes. Yeah. It's right after there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah. And then I really also like Nothing and Everything. That is the last main song of the show. I think that's a really good song that Billy and Rodell sing. And then they also have Colma Stays. I thought that was a really good song. Crash the Party, I think, is a really good song. That's at the very beginning.
Yeah, that's when they go to the party.
Crash the Party.
Which I think is my favorite part of the whole movie, that whole party sequence. It's just, it's a lot of fun. And the song is very funny. When he goes in the bathroom and then the girl is knocking on the door. It's just a lot of fun. And I think, if I were to give any kind of like critique of the movie, I guess, is that I feel like the first half, maybe it's more exciting and more fun than the second. I feel like the movie does lose a little bit of its steam for me, just a little bit when it turns like a little, I mean, it's understandable, but it turns a little bit more serious in the second half. And that makes it, I think, a little less fun, you know, but that's just like, kind of like how it goes when you want to do one of those shifts in tone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if I was going to offer critique, I would say that I do think sometimes the sound mixing, you could feel the $15,000.
That's the toughest thing to do with no budget is the sound. It's, you need to, you need to be very precise with that stuff.
But I enjoyed the music enough that I was, you know, willing to forgive that. But I had to keep changing the volume on my. But yeah, I really liked the party scene. That was a lot of fun. And, you know, he says, remember when my family told me I'm adopted? Yeah, I mean, and I guess the drama between Tara and Billy and his ex and Maribel, it maybe is gets a little melodramatic, but you know, it's high school.
But even then, I think that the movie does, you know, for something that was done by people who were so young, who I get the sense that they weren't that far removed from the experience of being in high school, the movie does have a lot of empathy, and it does want to see the point of view of most of its characters, you know, in that relationship between Tara also has moments of that I feel for her, you know, like that moment when she's having dinner with Billy and then the others come around and then Billy leaves and then she's left with Rodel and Rodel treats her totally, like basically ignores her almost as a person completely. And in that moment, I was kind of feeling for her, you know, it wasn't like, yeah, you go Rodel, show her how it is. Because I was able to see what she was experiencing in that moment. And even with the ex, when she shows up a little bit, I don't think it was like such a cruel portrayal of her, which I thought. And Billy is portrayed like a, you know, like an idiot for a lot of the movie. And you're like, oh, what are you doing? So I was impressed with that as well, with the ability to see the characters in all their shades.
Yeah. And this movie came out the same year as Napoleon Dynamite and Once, the John Carney movie.
Yeah. Another low budget musical that
And so it was an interesting time for indie movies, and I mean Napoleon Dynamite was such a huge hit, and but it kind of has a little bit of that same it's more of an outright comedy than this, but it's got some of that same kind of
high school malaise,
dry wit, just following these people around. And then Once it obviously has the musical element, but it's also about a platonic friendship.
The movie that this reminded me the most in tone, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Ghost World, Rachel. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I watched it last year for Blindspot.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the two girls in there are very sarcastic. They reminded, like, Billy and Rodel reminded me of them a little bit on that whole idea of, like, wanting to get out of this city and wanting to move on to the next thing, but feeling conflicted about it. And especially that thing about, like, being so kind of, like, using sarcasm and that kind of attitude in order to feel something, you know, to feel different, to feel sheltered from your situation a little bit, too.
Yeah. So why do you think this is on Criterion Channel?
I think it's an unusual pick for Criterion and Criterion Channel, but I am really happy that they did it. I'm really happy that it's, you know, because Criterion is this brand that it's associated with great cinema, and, you know, we have this preconception. So I think it's really cool that they can showcase movies like this that have such a small budget, you know, that like you were saying, that where the sound mixing is going to remind you that there wasn't a lot of money involved, and it was shot digitally in 2006, so, you know, it looks kind of like there's YouTube videos that look better than this movie now, you know, in terms of like video quality, but it is still a great piece of creativity and of the people, young people expressing themselves in a way that is actually works really well, and it's very, you know, fun and good, and it works. And I think being able to see that regardless of the package in which it comes in, I think it's really important, and it's really cool. And I do believe in that when it comes to movies and things like that.
Yeah, I think that it's nice when they support, as you said, true cult classics. Not, there's a lot of times when a movie that is just underrated.
Mm-hmm. It's called a cult classic, yeah.
Yeah, claimed something like, I've heard people claim that for something like Hunchback of Notre Dame. And I'm like, no, that's not a cult classic.
Yeah, that's a, that's a big Disney movie.
You want something with like a little more edge to it, a little bit more boots on the ground kind of idea. Mm-hmm. Like, well, the way it used to be at Sundance when it first started, now it's been a lot sort of co-opted by Netflix and Amazon, mm-hmm. and things like that. You still have some of those at Sundance, but not mm-hmm. as many as there used to be. Mm-hmm. People, you know, basically shooting a movie out of their, you know, out of their truck and with their friends. Like,
yeah,
that's really fun to be a part of. And it's like I say, it can be terrible, but when it all comes together, it's, there's something special about a true cult classic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think also it's kind of risky because it's not like, you know, sometimes you hear, it would be one thing if Criterion showcases something like Slacker or El Mariachi or something, you mm-hmm. know, movies that were the very low budget at their time and completely independent, but their directors went on to have these very celebrated careers, you know.
Yeah.
Richard Wong and H.P. Mendoza, they have a career, but they're not household names, you know, the way that right. Richard Linklater is. So it's right. really, it's really, I think it's really exciting to see them showcase and to be introduced to them as artists in this way. Yeah. It's a good use of the Criterion platform.
And it's cool that they have this Asian American film collection.
Yeah, I agree that it's very exciting, and that I hope that they showcase more movies like this in the future. This kind of like hidden gems, to quote one of Rachel's series on her other mm-hmm. channel.
Yeah. So where do you rank this on the pretentiousness scale? I think it's a tricky one.
I think it's pretty low, you know. I mean, I think it's I mean, there's a little bit of pretension in you know, wanting, I mean, I don't know. You know what? I give it a zero. I think this movie is just, it is what it is. It doesn't want to be pretentious. I think it wants to be serious about itself. You know, it mm-hmm. wants to tell something about its characters, wants to express something, and it wants to do it with this music and with this kind of like musical style and through song and dance and be creative as much as possible. So I think the movie is exactly what it is, and it's not pretending to be something that it's not, which to me is kind of like that pretensions thing. So yeah, so I'll go with a zero. I'll stick my neck out there.
That's good. Well, I would give it like I thought just a four, just because of the art house nature. You definitely have to kind of ignore certain things that because it is so low budget. And I don't know if that necessarily makes it pretentious, but I think overall it's very crowd pleasing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have a four. So as I was thinking about a remake, it was hard because I feel like a lot of my first inclination is to give them a big budget and have them be able to make the movie. Mm-hmm. But then I feel like you would lose some of the things that make it special.
Yeah, that's true.
So my solution was, I think it would be interesting if they made a documentary about the making of the movie.
That's a great idea. I would definitely watch that, and that would be cool. And that'd be interesting and fun to watch, I bet. And my idea is not too different. My idea was, because I thought exactly the same thing as you, the first thought is obviously, the obvious one is like, oh, just give them a big budget and they can remake it with more money and more resources. But then exactly you are like, oh no, but that will take away the charm of it. And that, and you know, and I do think that, that the big budget is not necessarily going to make it a better movie. It is what it is, and it works for the movie that it is. So I was thinking, if you were going to remake it, what I would do is I would go to Colma, and I would have teenagers, high school students who are there now, kind of like remake the movie themselves. So I would give them the resources and treat it almost like a revival of this kind of like passing of the torch to see what a younger generation does with the material. You know, and you can have the people, the original creators involved as well, and work with them. But I think that would be really cool. And I guess that could be one of those like documentary hybrid sort of things in which you're talking about the original and how it's going for the people making the new version. And then you see parts of the new version. I don't know. It could be something like that, or it could just be whatever they want to do. But I do think that so much of its power is the connection to the place and time. And I think that's what you would want to keep. Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea. It would be interesting to see what they would come up with if you gave them the free rein.
Yeah.
To just basically film their friends and give them the songs. And I mm-hmm. think that could be interesting.
Yeah. And I think that's the great, you know, that's kind of what we expect from musicals, especially stage musicals, is that they will be reinterpreted throughout the years, you know, and there will be new productions of them. So why not do that with a movie musical as well?
Yeah. Well, why don't you tell everybody what we are going to be doing for our next episode?
Yeah. So we have actually a couple of fun episodes coming up for you. We recorded a special bonus episode, which is where we're going to be talking about our favorite movies of the year 1992. And that is because my birthday is coming up and I'm turning 30, which means I was born in 92. So I decided to do this kind of a retrospective sort of thing. And what better way to do it than on Criterion Project with Rachel, because we love talking about movies together. Yeah. So that should be coming up soon. And after that, we will begin the fourth year of Criterion Project, our fourth season. We're going to go big or go home. You can't get much bigger than a giant lizard dinosaur. So we're going to go to 1954's Godzilla, the very original. And we'll be talking about that.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that because I watched that Godzilla 1954 for Blindspot last year and I really enjoyed it, so that'll be a lot of fun. And yeah, 1992, good year.
Yeah, good year, that's movies. What we discovered. Yeah, peek behind the curtain. We already recorded that episode and we had a good time and there were lots of mm-hmm. fun movies we talked about there.
Yeah.
So
yes, yeah. And speaking of musicals,
you got mm-hmm. a couple on my list. Yeah.
It'll be a lot of fun. You'll enjoy listening to it. And let us know if you've gotten to see Colma the Musical, what you thought of it. I think it's why you sign up for Criterion, is to get introduced to these more obscure titles.
Yeah, definitely. I would love really for fun. People who are listening to check this movie out. Because it feels very special. It feels very unique and you don't want to miss your chance to watch it if you can. All right. So I guess that's it for this episode, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, make sure that you're following us on Criterion Pod on Twitter. We'd love to hear your thoughts over there. And Conrad, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at CocoHitsNY. And if you want to watch the show, the web series that I've been talking about throughout this episode, that's on YouTube if you search Wormholes, the series.
Great. And you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. So check all of that out. Also, make sure you check out the Hallmarkies podcast. Lots of fun stuff, including, like I said, that Jane Eyre episode will be coming in May. It'll be really fun.
Yeah.
So check that out. And thanks so much, everybody. We'll talk to y'all later. Bye, everyone. Bye.